once the cat's out of the bag, you can't put it back in the bag. And so the frequency of exposure really works out to your benefit to increase the decrease the amount of exposure rather than to reduce the amount of exposure. Because that thing is now, you know, that's released. The Pandora's box has been opened up. And it will not be quenched by anything but absolute freedom. Just the way it works. So by trying to back off, be able to go back to the fondness of your bullshit dream and your, you know, inauthentic way of manipulating people so as not to piss yourself or them off, it's not going to work. But but don't listen to me.
He doesn't ever try that.
don't listen to me.
I'm thinking, you know,
I don't know
maybe
anything.
You're going to get sued by somebody who, you know, can't get back to where they once belonged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what are they going to sue me for? You know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Annihilation.
All right. Well. Okay. Call my attorney. Yeah, fuck you. Call my attorney.
I mean, honestly, I was a bit surprised that she was so interested in it from gung ho in the beginning.
Yeah, at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it started to have its effect.
Correct.
And it was like, oh, I thought that was just some kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
But shit.
Just going to turn it back to one time a week. This is making her a little too immersive. Okay.
Welcome to the Night Sky Sun. Well, you know, another useful intervention that not that many people take advantage of is, you know, metta practice, forgiveness practice. Because that's what it's really about. You discover through whatever means that you've been lying to yourself, that you've been lied to by yourself, of laid down quite a number of compromises and ineffectual denials to remain, well, ever, you know, nonplussed. And then, well, that charade, that ruse, is cracked open. So the tendency then, well, a certain amount of, you know, sublimated rage is cracked open. And then it can start, you know, pouring out in ways that is like, well, like projectile vomiting. That rage can be a very intense projectile. Just to play, you know, armchair psychiatric know-it-all, which I'm not, that rage is a symptom of self-deception. The beginning of the end of self-deception. So metta practice and forgiveness practices are actually, could be very useful.
I prefer the reverse metta.
Reverse.
Damn everyone and everything, especially myself.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a way to go, too. It's a little rougher road, you know. That road is loaded with deep ruts. The other one is paved. The self-forgiveness road is paved. The road of, you know, aversive outgassing, that's, you're going to break your axle several times and have to get new rims and shit on that road. But okay. you know, let's say to walk that path of, call it, you know, healing or wholeness, the journey of self-realization or revelation, you know, all of these sublimations are at risk. And it's not like you voluntarily, consciously chose or decided to commit fraud against yourself. You just fall into it. You just fall into fraud because the society is fraudulent. The media is fraudulent. The news, the education, the churches, the zendos, they're all fraudulent. In order just to remain even a little bit sane.
Oh.
Right? Forget that. We sign up for, you know, the family, right? The family absurdity and the religious absurdity and the educational absurdity and the employment absurdity and the relationship absurdities. And so when the ruse of oneself gets cracked open, well, if you want to call it in a more spiritual way, you know, that's fine. I'm sure J.P. Spears would have a field day with it. When that gets cracked open, yeah, it's good to have a lot of, you know, warm baths, a little puffy can't hurt, and some forgiveness practice is very useful to pave that rutted road. Because there's a lot of rage in there. There's a lot of sublimation in a soul that discovers that it has been lied to and that it's the principal perpetrator of that lie to itself. It's, you know, there's a certain kind of seething shit going on there. Well, you know, welcome to it. You pass through the fire of not just the content of all those lies, because, you know, that doesn't even matter so much. It's that it has occurred and that you've seen it and now you want out. And you're, one is still very commonly compromised by an urgency to want out, but a fear to commit to that.
What do you mean by want out?
Want out from under the influence of self-deception. You want out. You don't want to be the perpetrator or victim or recipient of self-deception.
Can it just be one honest evaluation at a time?
Well, sure. That shows up, doesn't it? It can look like that. But that's content. Yeah. Yeah, you want to leave the theater. One, let's say, morsel of forgiveness at a time or insight at a time. I mean, shit, that's useful. No, there's no point in dismissing that. But you might notice after a while that, you know, the journey of, let's say, forgiveness is, well, it's a cul-de-sac. It's theater. It's not as dangerous as the finality of consciousness. Yeah, being released from the imposition of consciousness. Yeah. So it still remains in the realm of human theater, which is, I got no quarrel with it. You know, it's your theater, it's your stage. You're the main character. You're the audience. You run the lights and the sound. If somebody forgets a line, well, then you give yourself the line. So it's all you, right? The theater is really all you. What else could it be? you're the flowering of your own karmic orientation, right? And you didn't sign up for how you showed up. Everyone's got free will. It's like, well, God, yeah, you really change your personality, like today. Be someone else. What? You can't be someone else. You're the way you show up. So the theater of your life, it's your theater. It's your theater company. So it's possible that the, might I refer to it as a deeper impulse, is to sell the theater. Right? And that's a different, I would argue, that's a different kind of, let's say, a heroic adventure than just perfecting your show. You don't want a standing ovation every night. You want to sell the theater. Get out of there.
An invitation to just drop everything you've ever found. Find out what else is there.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. Yeah. You can't have a clue. You can't have a clue. If you have a clue, you're clueless. When you're really clueless, you're clueless. Two kinds of ways of being clueless. One is clueless as self-deception, and the other is revelatorially clueless.
Just like knowing that you don't know. Clueless.
Yeah, UG talked about when he was like walking down the street with his wife, and he'd be like, "What's that?" She's like, "A flower." And he'd like walk on the step and be like, "What's that?" She's like, "It's a flower." I'm walking, I said, "What's that?" And he's like, "It's a flower." he said it's quite literal.
If you don't turn your attention to the content of mind and memory, what orientation do you have? What regrets do you have? You know, what pursuit of spiritual or other progress do you have? You got nothing. You have clueless. Present, call it demonstration of being, is the causeless joy of cluelessness. And it doesn't actually require any effort at all to recognize and rest, lean into, nuzzle with, spoon with cluelessness. Spoon up. If something shows up in your so-called consciousness or experience that demands attention, whether it's delirium, delusion, reality, I don't care. If something shows up that demands attention, well, give it some attention. You know, all right. But we become self-infatuated. We become addicted to frustrations and self-consideration and remedial actions. And those are all fantasy driven. If you find something that makes it appear as if something needs to be done about something, okay, well, then do it.
It's kind of a relief.
Yeah.
Because seems to me being irrelevant is not always joy-filled.
Okay.
Well, in one way it is, but in another way, it's kind of like, it's like somebody paying attention to you. Somebody saying, "How are you today?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, "Oh, I want to do something." Something like that.
Yes, that's right.
Otherwise, it's nothing.
Yep. And even when it appears there's something,
there's
still nothing.
But I can pretend.
Yeah. Why everyone else is? Why shouldn't you? Yeah. So it's your theater. Yeah. It's your theater. If something shows up, well, you know, follow the script.
I guess self-deluding, but it's somewhat comforting to feel as though there's something you need to do.
Yes, entertaining.
It's like I got a fucking purpose for
purpose, know. Utility, validation, justification, future that matter. Yeah, of course. Yeah. It would be, you know, it'd be kind of rude to put that any of that down, you know, or diminish that as, you know, craving or aversion. You don't have anything to do with it anyway. So why blame someone for craving or aversion if this, you know, revelation of what's appearing as the theater of one's life is showing up involuntarily? So then respond to it the way that you always have. So many, you know, aspirants mistake, you know, whatever realization might be as something that can be packaged or boxed or have relevance for the human meme, for the theater. They don't yet see that, no, a realization is after you've sold the theater. That's the implication. You've sold the theater. There's no longer any theater. And if theatrical enterprise shows up, it's quite remarkably clear that it's not you.
But you can pretend. I mean, sometimes. No, thanks.
What is eight things, Jim?
Oh, those are the cheese crisps, the low-carb cheese crisps.
Apple, yeah,
they're really good. All right, well, good. I don't want to share them with anyone. I'm just going to take them home. No, I'm teasing. That would be bad.
A little bit like this.
Let's record the cheese crisps and cheese crisp crunch and see what that'll look.
Whiskey
on the back?
Okay. Whisps. Wow. Cheesy, it's like a cheesy potato chip for ketogenic people.
Cheese and potato.
Is it cool enough we can shut the AC off, or should we leave it?
You want me to?
Would you hit the power button?
No.
Turn the fan down.
Yeah. It's not that warm.
It's like fried cheese.
Wow. It almost feels to me like a reprieve.
Well, sure.
You know?
Well, it's the most dangerous reprieve. That's why. That's why someone will say, I gotta kick.
Take me from 2 to 1.
I gotta go from 2 to 1. Yeah.
I actually think I mean the opposite.
Uh huh.
The reprieve is when I think I have something I need to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah, keep your eyes busy.
So it's like.
Mm hmm.
Yeah. It's like an old familiar.
Of course.
Comfortable.
But it's not like you. It's not like having nothing to do needs to be the default condition. you know, there's shit to do. I mean, if you turn into one of those, if you turn into one of those strange yogis that basically, you know, sit in a rigor mortis samadhi for pretty much 24 hours a day, then let's hope you've got friends, you know, close enough to you to throw you in the tub once in a while, put a fresh burlap sack on your back, and clean your poop.
Close you off.
Hose you off. Yeah. Hose you off and, you know, bring people around to see you in your exalted state. So, and guess what? You can. Why not become that yogi sitting, resting in the absolute exaltation of emptiness and still put up a bowl of Cheerios? Right? It doesn't have to be, nothing has to be so-called full time. I don't know why Ramana was sitting in, you know, some kind of rigor mortised samadhi, unaware of the world, for as long as he allegedly did, while various creatures were, you know, literally chewing the flesh off his bones, and with no consciousness or pain nor fear or any other reaction on his part. Maybe it was like God just trying to show you, like, you know, this shit can look really strange. It wasn't really necessary to do. It didn't make Ramana any more sacred than anything else. It didn't, really. It's just that that's what happened to him. He became so absorbed at such a young age in a, call it sacred, Deccan plateau of India, southern India. And I guess the circumstances were right, that he just went straight to Brahman and never looked back until finally whoever decided that you'd be better off kind of wearing a diaper and a cane and petting some cows and kind of be with us a little bit. And he was like, yeah, all right. You know, it's not, he didn't say, go build the ashram over there. They just, everyone just put up huts around wherever he was because he was that cool. You know, he was that cool. He was that magnetic. He was that strange. As you call it, a force of kindness, right? A force of a demonstrative ascension. And so people were like, I'm going to hang out with that fucking guy. I left home, I left my wife, I quit my job, I gave my money away, and I put on a robe, and I'm just sitting anywhere near that guy. And then people did that, you know, wisely so. It worked out for some of them, it didn't work out for all of them. But life's an adventure, so, you know, they took the adventure. I mean, we have a tendency to think that, you know, we rank the gurus in terms of what? I mean, authenticity, tapas, right? Physical pain, vibration, good looks, food. How do you rank?
Shakti.
How do you do these rankings? And referring to what? How many people they affected, or how many so-called aspirants, devotees, became also enlightened by hanging out with them? You know how many people coursed through Nirsagadatta's living room? A bunch over the course of years. And then the percentage of them that, you know, woke up or whatever? Not very many. Wayne Lickerman's been traveling the world, you know, for many years now. He's got a lot of friends. Probably had sex with a bunch of them. Maybe not. don't know if that's still, he's still into that. which is fine, you know, consenting adults, spiritual path, razor's edge, let's get laid. What the fuck? Yeah. So I don't know how many, you know. And people that participate in the Night Sky Sangha experience, says, I don't know, does anyone have a fucking clue whether anyone's changed even a little bit?
Oh, come on. I think so.
All right, well. You know, you'd be the judge. I wouldn't know.
Marie thinks so.
For the better, yeah.
Keep going to that.
Yeah, you keep going to that. I don't know.
I get 3 nights a week all to myself. Isn't that really for you?
It took a long time for her to adapt.
Yeah.
The Night Sky Sangha Widow.
Yeah. It's a cult.
Rate the gurus for us, man.
rate the gurus.
You were talking about how do we rate the gurus. You mean you're the one who's got the widest breath.
I definitely have hung out with a lot of them. I don't know.
Yes, you do. Spit it out.
Well, I'm thinking if you could do like a, you know how you get the, what is the ratio for stocks? Like the price of the stock over how much you get back from it. There's some ratio.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
So it's like for Byron Katie, the price of her events over how much they cost, like that kind of ratio.
That's a low ratio, right? Low rate of return.
Rate of return.
Yeah, but
ROI,
it costs
baby.
A lot, but you get a big kick. You get a big fucking kick.
Okay.
She gets 200 people or more higher than a friggin' kite.
Yeah. Hey, so does LifeSpring, and so does Landmark.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain...
So does Tony Robbins.
...aspect to that, it seems, you know? I mean, it seems like it. I mean, not that I've been to one, you know, but I get the impression it's sort of... The crowd gets worked up, you know.
Joel Osteen does it too.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Robert Schuller did it in his day in the Crystal Cathedral.
He was great. I loved him. Yeah. He was fun.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, he was a blast.
Uh huh.
So these people, they have the knack, you know.
Hey, Lindsey Buckingham can do it too.
That's true. Yeah.
Roger Waters knows how to do it.
Yeah.
With a big screen.
Ah.
I don't even know what I'm dealing with anymore. It's different. Really different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I had a blast hanging out with Adam. I loved it.
Great.
And it.
Yeah.
And... I can't say I walked away with anything. I mean, on Sunday I was happy enough to come to Night Sky and set up time.
Yeah.
Blow off the last, final segment, doesn't it? I don't know.
Think the Clearwater Sangha judged you for that?
No. Not at all. No, not at all.
They don't care. Well, you know, it gets too simple. Mm-hmm. It becomes so uncomplicated. You know, that the thrill of teaching or hearing or discussing, it just changes texture.
Your texture changes.
Not me.
Yes, you are.
This is.
Yes. Guru Jeff.
You are a serious technician.
Yeah. Flowers. I'll get the flowers.
Now you got
to gotta get rid of you people. It's not me. You know, really,
look at
it's just,
look at the stuff.
It's just, it's just whatever this is. It's whatever this is.
Left to our own devices, though. Of course, you know what happened.
Well,
roll back downhill.
Yeah. So, you know, as you make,
I mean, maybe not as far back.
Yeah. You know, you make a so-called little bit of progress in your sadhana. You know, your rage. And you start leaning into, start spooning with being with a little more frequency or ease or confidence. So you're not placing as many demands upon yourself or anyone else around you,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's that. You're nourished by the simplicity of yourself. The reflex to, you know, pursue various kinds of psychic distraction or entertainment or storytelling. Do you find those less interesting? That's the yoga. It's always been that, whatever culture.
Well, for me, I just like being around people.
Sure.
I like it a lot. And being around people in any kind of even pseudo-spiritual context
uh-huh.
to me is more rewarding than, like, you know, going to play with a Yahtzee group or a group.
Right.
Club or,
yeah, even, it's, just, it's even if it's pseudo-spiritual.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, of course. I know. It's true.
It just has a punch to it that you don't get in other contexts. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like people. I'd rather do that every night of the week than just about anything else.
Yeah. yeah. So let's say a certain quietude, you know, shows up. You become more acquainted with and accustomed to a certain vibration, a certain quietude. Now, to the, let's say, to the former and quickly declining egoic orientation, that quietude or stillness could be felt as enjoyable or not enjoyable, right? Peaceful or not peaceful, as a destination or not a destination. The point being is that as you start moving into a different texture of experience, your former conditioning is trying to suss it out and suss you. You are sussing you out in relation to this dimension which hangs around long enough that you can't refuse it. You can't pretend it doesn't exist. Right. Oh, yeah, this, oh, this exists, all right. Yeah. The fuck is this? So you can say there's a period where your former and healthy egoic self is like, What the fuck is this? Fuck you. And that's right. That's to be appreciated, right? Just like I'd better come once a week instead of, you know, two times a week because. Blah, 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 blah. But something else will occur to accompany or complement that. Is that the stillness is not just merely the cessation of the bullshit of you that you've been trying to you know, run from for a long time. It actually has its own, right? It's its own theater. It's another, call it, you know, theater. But it's not the theater of, you know, I me, my, the body, I me, my, the mind, I me, my, time. It's a whole, right, nuanced, call it realm or trans realm of, well, you know, I don't know, engagement, entertainment.
Totally indifferent to you.
Yes.
The texture of it and the feeling of it is like, whew, you don't even exist when you're really tuned into that.
No, you don't. There. The miracle of being totally indifferent to you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you disappear in the unbelievably deafening silence of it.
Hear, hear.
The vestiges of the ego, I find, if I, you know, I don't know about very how true any of this is, but I feel it in my muscles. I feel this tension right now, you know, mm-hmm. And that's like a memory. It almost seems like it's like a physical memory. It's like,
sure,
maybe that's where the memory is to a large extent. The tweaking of the body this way or that way, you know.
Well, you're familiar with so many different therapies, right? Yeah. Somatically oriented therapies that work with tissue, connective tissue and bone and stacking and all that kind of stuff that assist the somatic structure, right, to, let's just say, rebalance, right, to occupy itself more lightly without these, you know, chronic sigils, mm-hmm, right, climbing on you. You know, what do you do with yourself when the habit of orientation is at peace? It's not even that I can't assert context or content. I don't want to, or I don't need to. You see, there's no, right, there's no reflex. Yeah, that's strange. Because what we call ego, you could say, is merely the reflex to assert context and content. In any, with any possible object that might appear, you know, in the theater of one's life. Now, if that curious impulse were to come to absolute rest, I mean, you know, you've just become drama free. With no effort, no justification, right? No scientific method. No spiritual method. No content, no context, no assertion. You know, you're not worrying about what other people are doing or not doing, or whether it's working for them or not working for them. You've got nothing to defend, nothing to justify. There's no way that you have the slightest interest in convincing anybody of anything.
it's funny, for all that, you come on pretty strong. On a lot of topics.
You mean you, we, or you, you?
You, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, you mean you have to razzle and dazzle just to keep the juices flowing.
But I think there's this liberating effect. It's like, well, why?
Yeah.
Why cloak it? You know.
That's true. I'm not saying you know I wouldn't be here if I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But it's definitely.
I know. I find that good myself. Well, you know, why cloak it? You know.
Yeah.
It's a more satisfying way to be, I think.
Play to your strengths. You know, if you're designed a certain way.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a breathy kind of person. Hi everyone. So nice to see you this evening.
Midnight shift on the
right.
Yeah.
That's Allison Steele, the Nightbird. Yeah. Jeannie Zandi, the Guru. Right. Yeah. You know, so if you're that way, if you're like to be breathy behind the mic, well, go ahead, be breathy behind the mic. You know. If you like to get angry at chemtrails, then use that. It's funny that, right, no matter what the theater is, which is the theater that's, you could say, just kind of autopoetic, occurs as folks get together. Right? Folks get together in a certain kind of theater. Right? Occurs out of nowhere. Occurs out of nothing. No one's in charge of it. It's just, it's organic for the constitution of the karmas that have decided to show up. And so no matter what the theater is, the sneaky nature of realization is afoot. Because the content and context are entertaining, theatrical, but they're not what this is actually about. So the part of the so-called yoga, right, or the journey of it, is to be, can we just say, accepting or forgiving or relaxed with one's theater, the theater that is you, see that it's not about the context or content of the theater that is you, and so quarreling with the theater, healing that theater, transcending, right, is not really all that important, though why should that show up? Go see your therapist. Go see your reflexologist. Go see your yoga teacher. Get craniosacral therapy. Walk on coals. You know.
It all becomes a little bit lighter. You know,
sure.
It's just, you know.
Yeah. Listen to Deepak Chopra.
Isn't as large. It's reducing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, to rest in the release of assertiveness. Well, that's that. Then whatever theater shows up to attract or hold your attention, you're like, okay,
yeah.
Right? Showtime. I mean, isn't that right? I mean, day in and day out, whether you're sleeping or when you finally wake up and start to so-called function in your day, whatever your day looks like, you know, showtime. But none of that need interfere or define your inner freedom, the freedom from not placing anything in context or content.
You've said how free do you want to be, and I'm assuming that apex of freedom is free to just let life roll and run, and you're free. And it rolls and runs, and the theater goes on.
Hasn't that been the case up till now? I mean, even with all the suffering that we could recall, any of us, right? Despite the narrative that I could or anyone could regurgitate as my life full of suffering, hasn't it also just been completely organic? Because here you are. Here you are now.
It's kind of free from the agony of, holy shit, I did it wrong, or I should do it different.
Well, the clinging to any kind of story, whether it's the story of injury or the story of accomplishment or the story of having had or not had remarkable spiritual experiences, don't matter. Right? All is forgiven. Yeah. We might hope that something like freedom or realization actually has a takeaway, some utility.
Well, you get everything.
Okay. We'll put that on the packaging. The testimonial page for the Night Sky Sangha. You get everything. Wow, I want to join that group. You get everything. Well, maybe you do, but between now and then, you'll have to come fewer times because people think you've been turned into a rageaholic.
That's only, and this is
a strong sense of immersion. That's one of the things you get.
I was thinking early that when I see creatures such as myself in front of me,
yeah,
being perfect idiots, I can see it now.
Yeah.
Whereas before,
yeah.
Maybe I was planning my next move or my comment or I was being hurt or challenged. But now it's like a display.
Yeah.
And you can, and for me, I see a lot of wacky people.
Well, yes, the, you know, what we call the theater or expressive nature of humans under one or many forms of delirium is wacky, you know. It's suffering.
I don't think I used to see it, though.
Maybe not.
I think I was,
you're part of it.
I was engaged with their, whatever they're doing, and
yeah.
You know, in the theater. In
yeah, the, that's yeah. Right. You bought a ticket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got a ticket to ride.
Yeah. Now you bought a ticket and you got loge seats and the orchestra was, you know, whipping up some really
yeah.
Wild shit and you were like... Yeah. Yeah, in a realization town, it's always intermission.
That's
silly. Sell the theater. Just sell it. Give it away.
Yeah, but you could sell the theater, give it away, and the show goes on.
You'll find another.
The show just keeps going on.
Yeah. Yep.
On, but
nope. You know, the refrain of what should I do about myself, which might sound as if you're trying to remedy some kind of disquietude. It's quite the opposite. What should I do about myself is your, right, fabrication and Lego building of the imagination of things that are happening or not happening to you that threaten you somehow, threaten you financially or reputationally or stuff in your closet or threaten your memories or your dignity, right? Mm-hmm. Threaten your beliefs. Yeah. You could say that, you know, the dawning or the luminosity of a so-called liberating journey or liberating event occurs to the mind that has no quarrel, the mind that has no content or context. Because that quality of, you know, psychic easefulness, psychic rest, well, it's made out of availability. So it's a very short distance, if you will, from gracious availability to the dawning of self-luminosity. If you had to, you know, kind of do a Gantt chart, a mental Gantt chart. But even that is, you know, no rule. You could imagine all kinds of people have woken up in the midst of, right, deep tumult. Mm-hmm. And fear, you know, spiraling down into a hell realm from which they would never ever recover, and the realization appears there.
And they assume a different identity, and they go on the road, and
that's right.
The dollars really start rolling.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, you become, you know, I mean, in this marketplace, if you're good at it, you can become an enlightened celebrity, mm-hmm. and attract the attention of thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of people or more, and, you know, write books. Mm-hmm. Fuck, ghostwrite books. Mm-hmm. You don't have to write anything. You can hire Deepak Chopra's ghostwriters. I'm sure they'll be happy to jump on your shit.
Transcripts.
You give them, yeah, transcripts. You give them a little rough outline. Before you know it, you have another, you know, power of now. I mean, you know, Eckhart Tolle's already got his comedian spokesmodel lined up, so you might have to tap somebody else. Tap another celebrity.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, yeah. Jim Carrey's taken. Eckhart Tolle nailed him. Good investment. So if you want to find a comedic spokesmodel, maybe you can talk to Senator Al Franken. You know, maybe Jimmy Fallon will fall in love with you, mm-hmm. and then start.
How about Louis C.K.?
Or Louis C.K. Louis C.K. will start singing your praises during his stand-up routines, and you'll become even more popular.
Well, we can get Louis C.K. to do it, man.
Yeah.
That would be pretty amazing.
It would be. Yes, it would.
Yeah, Jim Carrey really is so compelling when he speaks. Like, God.
Yes. Theater.
He's a believer.
Yeah. I can see why he's such a popular actor. He really has that liver pit factor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so many of the memes become just words, you know, they've been commoditized, you know. The stuff that I seem to get pretty regularly from this Eckhart Tolle group, which yeah. I signed up for in the first place.
Oh, the email thing?
Email things.
Mm-hmm.
Get them all the time. And the latest one is about teaching, you know, and I just thought I would check it out, see what it would cost me. Because I knew there was a bottom line.
Oh, yeah.
It's $60. That's pretty bargain rate. It's a bunch of CDs or DVDs that tells you how to take it on the road.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Teaching aids?
Well, these just doing more of the same. You know, he's talking, and the talk is great, but, you know. It seems to be.
Does he want you to take his stuff on the road or take your own stuff?
No, the stuff.
Any stuff, okay. Oh, the stuff. Really?
Okay. Well, you know, he has a way of framing things, you know, presence and now.
How
was
it?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a pretty long DVD right there.
That about covers it. Presence now, we're done.
Huh. Yeah.
The words this way and that way.
You get a set of 12 DVDs on presence and now. Whoa.
I mean, I always like listening to them, but.
Sure.
It's a little annoying.
He's an entertaining speaker.
You know,
I can't.
It's always commoditized.
His speaking,
I used to love it.
He's a tough voice, isn't he?
He's the reverse of Jim Carrey.
Oh, I think he's
the most uncompelling speaker, I think. Yeah.
He has a hypnotic charm.
It does.
Osho was remarkably, you know, had a hypnotic charm.
Yeah.
He's got that mysteriousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he hypnotized a lot of people. Maybe it's just the natural, organic progression of consciousness confusing itself through identification and subjectification and objects and, you know, the power of whatever mind is to dream and to project scenarios, right? And that has, the ROI begins to decline after a while. Maybe suffering in life and confusion and not being able to get one's relationships right and affairs and consciousness oriented has to look a little more deeply at the so-called nature of things, rather than presuming that conformist reality can be found and relied upon coming from, you know, societal conditioning. And so it matures further. And the reflex of dramatization starts to get a little quieter or easeful, then there appear, you know, gaps in the continuity of self. You're like, what?
Where there was once an assumption, now there's a...
yeah, right? And that same reflex to opine or figure out or place in context or lay blame or accusation or justification or causality, right? All of which are lovely, right? Part of the theatrical aspect of mind. It's just like, no thanks. So how is it, you know, it's not like one really got to satisfy their questions or stacked up a sufficient library of answers that said, got this. That didn't actually occur. It just didn't. Even though we may have read a lot and studied a lot and this and that a lot, you never really got your questions answered. I mean, maybe you read the Urantia book from front to back and you think you have some answers, or you've read Madame Blavatsky or something and you think she has answers, and now you're a lifelong dedicated theosophist. You never find anything. Mm-hmm. There's no answers to anything. But that quality of identity or mind that insists on content and context just of its own accord just gives up.
Thank God.
Yeah, yes. Thank God.
But 742,000 years ago, this group of aliens came from this set of planets and came here.
Yep.
Oh, my God. That's
yes.
Freaking 2,000 pages of that Urantia book.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Is that?
Yeah.
Well, like sure.
Tiny, giant pages with tiny print. Like,
oh, my God.
Actually, it's probably, I think it was more than 2,000.
How is it possible that it could have even been written?
I have no idea.
How can you pour that much delirium onto the printed page? I mean, really. And even if it all did happen,
well, you'll find another tome about something totally different.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And you keep digging.
Doesn't jive, you know.
That's right.
Jive or whatever the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so well constructed, so logical.
Well,
yet,
you know,
I believe none of it.
Yeah. What's that book? That Marianne Williamson thing?
Well,
all right, one of the books I was.
Not her books, what, you know, the Course in Miracles thing. Yeah. The Course in Miracles thing is like another, you know, it's like another power of now. You know, it's like pathwork and other, you know, psycho-spiritual sine waves in the literature.
I can accept, because I don't know any better.
Yeah, right.
They are divinely inspired, but I have no idea what that really means.
They're
totally paradoxical to each other.
Yeah.
And they're all divinely inspired.
Heard a voice, said, write this down, write it down. Apparently.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's funny because you get a different story from everybody. Eugene's book, he just closed the last section and said, like, this has nothing to do with psychology. This is purely biological. I'm like, right? As far as Eugene.
Mm.
Yeah, this is purely biological enlightenment. I'm like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Take to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was funny that way.
He was different, man.
He means like people think like, oh, you gotta like solve your trauma and therapy and disease.
So they are humans, and yeah. He endorses.
He's saying that
he endorses the.
He endorses human. The human only from the biological side, not from the psychological side.
Oh, okay.
Upstairs is just irrelevant.
He endorses the endorphin.
I get that.
He thinks you go through some biologic transformation due to some encounter with something other than experience or something.
Well, I mean, he had that was such a big thing to him
yeah.
in his life, so maybe that's where that's coming from.
Well, yeah, it was an emphasis that he relied on in his teaching and his writing, of course, and discussions with people because of the calamity, right? And the calamity was, in his case, a biologically referenced discontinuity.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But, I mean, you don't see that kind of emphasis coming out of, let's say, Nirsagadatta's work at all.
Yeah, they didn't say anything about the body, really.
Except that you're not one.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's an old Hindu, you know.
Yeah.
That's got a beat and you can dance to it.
Well, what did you write about the Sangha and the Dharma? Because they seem to be... like they might be mirroring this thing about body and mind.
Well, sure. Yeah.
can't remember what you wrote.
Sonic and Nerman.
Well, you know, in... If the strange display of experiencing, right, the undulating nature of consciousness has taken root as you, then the Sangha is the gesture of validation, community, being esteemed, being useful, right? Yeah, that's the...
And Dharma.
Well, the Dharma is the craving of, well, absolute autonomy. No reliance on Sangha. Right.
Seems funny that there are such things as Dharma talks.
Sure. Yeah.
Although this is really a Dharma talk. I mean, you could
say... Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you could try to export it over to IMS. They'll run you out of town.
Shoehorn it in somewhere.
I gave a good Dharma talk once at IMS. The staff was like, what the fuck was that?
Wait a minute, IMS, what is that?
Insight Meditation Society. Oh. Yeah, no, it had a punch. Yep, but then the Dharma police were kind of after me. You know, it was a little too like, whoa.
Down.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely part of that.
Well, we had the Dharma, the Sangha, what about the Buddha?
Yeah, yeah, so, well, you know, the Buddha is for children. Because, you either want to paternalize or maternalize the adventure of dissolution and have someone to look up to as being the purveyor of both Sangha and Dharma. You see?
Titular head.
Yeah, the titular head. Yeah. So you don't, here at the Night Sky Sangha, you don't need the Buddha. If you want one, there's many for the taking, all right? I mean, you can turn anything into the Buddha of your choice or making. But the inspiration there was like how, you know, your spirit starts to loft up a little bit and you're like, you can just see the delicious side of, you know, validation, right? In the community of kindred souls, the Sangha, right? It's like, everyone's esteeming everyone and everyone's practicing forgiveness practices and, you know, it's just like, you wouldn't dare eat someone else's avocado from the fridge, you know? It's like, oh my God, this is just so great. It doesn't actually occur, but the feeling is kind of nice. Yeah.
How many avocados did you eat?
Yeah, really. That's bad. And then the other side was the Dharma, which is not just the body of, you know, teaching or the methodology, but It's the soul of, you know, liberated understanding. It's the fruition of, you know, autonomy and the fruition of emptiness. And so one has transcended, if you will, the reliance upon Sangha because you become the Buddha. That's that. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing that kind of rising up and, you know, seeing those two natures that you could say we have, two ethers, right? The one to be useful and belonging and safe, contributing, right? The rhythm and routine of a satisfying, nourished life. I don't think anyone ever lives one, but it's nice. And then the other is like, I'm out of here. I sold the theater. I sold the theater and I'm not accountable to humanity any longer. Right? That's the Dharma. At least in the way that I was playing around with the poetry of it.
I feel like this is somehow related to, I guess it's the saying, there's a mountain, it's not a mountain, it is a mountain. So the Sangha, let's see, is a mountain. Well, let's say Buddha isn't. No. Hold on a second.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Put it together.
Maybe the Sangha is, I don't know, but it's just another part of the same thing. It just appears or is taken to be something different. Which you can say about anything, I guess.
This might help clear it up.
Yeah, I'm lost, but that's okay.
You got to start somewhere.
There's a if you are the mountain, I am the mountain.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to say you need the Sangha.
Yeah.
When I'm not a mountain, you go through that.
Yeah.
With the Sangha.
Yeah.
Into.
Yes.
I am a mountain.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Thanks for indulging me.
Sure. I mean that's a good one. It's your poetry. This is your theater. You know, you write the show. Well, that's the beauty of it, really. I mean, you know, look at Paul Herman gnash his teeth together and spew all of that absurd shit that comes out of his mouth about stuff that kind of looks Buddhist and kind of looks, you know, 12-step-ish and kind of looks non-dual and kind of looks like this. And, you know, it's just a never-ending stream of hilarity. And you're like, do you have any fucking teachings? What the fuck are you talking about? And then he'll yell at you and say, I'm not talking to you. Right? I'm talking to that. I'm not talking to you. Right? I mean, Nirsagadatta was, you know, same thing. So we're not talking to the person. We're not talking to the identity field of the person. Right? The communion is a causeless revelation. That's what's being spoken to. That's what's animating, right? One's soul, one's consciousness. Yeah. So, you know, you take the risk then to wean oneself from context and content, and take the risk to see whether the emptiness of being might have something for you. It's not like you need a whole bunch of Sanskrit or anything. You don't. You don't need a bunch of Sanskrit or, you know, peculiar vocabulary, specialized, right, language. No, just kick it around.
Yeah, I remember Claude said something very similar to something I just read that UG wrote, and it was like...
Mm-hmm.
It was him, like, both regarding experience, and it was just like, whatever has happened was not in here.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Where the does that leave me then?
Right.
Feeling mightily useless.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, when, you know, as the circuits are being fried, the mice are eating the wires, you know, and you're starting to short out. Even the notion of a sense of self that has existed, is existing, and will continue to exist, you know, as body, as sensation, as mind, as content and context, the artifacts of one's life, the belongings, not just the physical ones, but the impressions, right? That's the field that one refers to as myself. And, wow, if the mice are successful and you start shorting out, then that whole body of what you have affectionately referred to as yourself Nope. You don't rely upon it, right? You don't manufacture your present through the so-called consequences of your past.
Where else is anything other than experience? Like,
well, in one way, nowhere. All, if there's anything, then you could say the word experience covers it. Is there any other place outside of experience?
I mean,
if there is, then I don't know anything about it.
Well, that's like similar to what they said, but then they were like, still, there is some place where something happened that wasn't experienced.
Well, there is a place, and it's no place.
Something happened to that place?
That's what they're, that's what they, when I say something happened, that's what they mean, like their enlightenment experience, or, you know, their enlightenment non-experience, non-anything that can happen, but happens, like...
Well, Yuji is, you know, well, emphasizing the calamity as a biological event, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul Heyman said the same thing, like, oh, it's just, you know, I can't quite experience it, but it's there. I know it's there. I'm like, what the fuck are you going on about, dude?
I don't know. Right. You know, any characterization, right? Of the present, call it vibratory sigil of experiencing, is okay. No characterization can be true at the expense of its so-called opposite, because it's right. It's just a characterization. It's a poetic. It's a poetic emergence. And what this might actually be is like, hey, you can talk about me any way you want as long as you're talking about me. You know, it's like, yeah, you can say that and you can say that and you guys can disagree and I'm cool with it because what else are you talking about but me, right? The sacred inexpressible. Say what you want about me.
Irrepressible, inexpressible.
Yeah. Yes. Irrepressible, inexpressible. Yeah.
By which I mean that's all that's happening.
If anything's happening, then that would be it.
And that's everything.
Okay, if you'd like to call it that. If we could use the word actual to merely suggest whatever this might be or not be, without characterization or without narrative, that's what actual tries to imply. What this might actually be or not be, not any reliance on some kind of characterization. If you're appearing involuntarily, if you're appearing improvisationally, well then so is the so-called movement of or content and context of mind as a symbology system. So that is also, right, appearing improvisationally, impersonally, spontaneously. We think that, well, no, mind is real, right? That the profound power of symbols, sigils, and texture is what's real, and so it therefore has the privilege to opine on everything and dictate what's true and what's not true. You're like, time out. This incredible movement of symbology and words and sentiment, texture and characterization is merely appearing improvisationally and impersonally along with everything else. So try not to get too excited about your capacity to call a spade a spade. Right? One weans oneself from the magical capacity to use symbols and implications and sentiment and language and memory and theatrical presentation to mean anything at all. And you're like, whoa. Right? You're released from the magical power that you possess without fee of being able to assert symbols, sigils, and implication.
I think at the same time, the calling a spade and getting all excited about it is intimately, I mean, it is what's happening. And so it also is.
Okay, yeah.
Let's say actual in that way.
Sure, yes, yeah. The suffering, how, regardless of how it may be occurring, appearing, or what the genesis or explanation of it is actual. Right, if there's irritable sensation, if there's...
But I would add that only in the... this moment, which is already gone.
Yeah.
Like only in the flush of everything.
Okay. So there, right. Yeah.
So if you were going to bring it from the past or talk about what's going to happen in the future, then you're, yeah, off, you're off the board. Sort of.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're one is relying upon the magical power of symbology and language, implication and projection to conjure a theatrical event to enroll oneself and or others in its so-called meaning. Like whatever might have happened prior to now can only be conjured as a fantasy through whatever theatrical tools you have at your disposal to convince yourself or anybody else that it did happen. Acting. Yeah. Baudelaire. If you start, you know, noticing whatever yourself might be, appearing kind of behind yourself or not quite in the picture, you're not really quite in the room, you're not quite in the dialogue, in the picture, you're not in the drama, right? Because that sense of occupying this body and mind from a vantage point somewhere between the ears or, you know, in the heart or the thymus or the spleen or the gonads that says I, that's gotten very, very relaxed. So I is no longer associated with, let's call the boundaries of your apparent physicality. I is like...
And everything is appearing.
Yeah. In. Yeah. So it's not, so you see, you're like, you're not really in the room anymore. A little bit, right? A little bit from time to time. You're just, you're not in the room anymore. You're not functioning or operating through this boundary, yeah, field, mm-hmm, as I. Hmm? There's a bug?
Yeah, I think there's skeeters.
Wow. Oh.
Coming to get.
They always come. Just around this point, they're like, oh, we're starting to go into that shit. Let's start buzzing people.
Just before you said, oh,
yeah. Oh, shit. That was the call.
Oh, it's permeating the whole space.
That was the mosquito call.
Mara.
Yeah, yeah, maybe Mara, that's right. Yeah. And we get a little disoriented, you know, when you're in the room, but you're not in the room.
Well, but, yeah, there's...
Yeah.
The we, yeah, is not there anymore.
Yeah. You know, your stuff, your drama, your job, your relationships, your, you know, da 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 da, you're like, I wonder how all this is happening.
There is all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just, let's call that the biological or natural consequence of a mind that's no longer rushing to reassert itself. Right? Through content and language and theater. So yeah, you're hungry, you know, you eat your avocado, or if you're hungry and you're mischievous, you eat someone else's avocado. and then that at that evening's meditation circle, you just deny it and deny it and deny it. And it's like, Sangha. what one thinks, what anyone thinks they want from whatever it is they want, from what it is that they want and what it is they hope to get, and then what effect it will have on what they get or what they want or how they're or organizing their imaginary life to take advantage of what they want to get, what they get, what they want, never works out. It just doesn't. It doesn't work out. And the same thing is true with being curiously interested in, you know, realization. You might think, well, if I can fuck, I can just be better at something, or, you know, less annoyed with myself, or all these things that we think we want to be able to derive from being committed to a spiritual journey for, you know, a month or two once in a while. But what happens if it really starts to kick in and you're like, wait, I don't want this. You're like, too late. It snuck up on you. Like, I don't want to, like, be in my house and, like, not be in my house. You know, communicate with my husband or my animals, but just not actually be there. I don't know where I'm supposed to be anymore. Who or what or where I'm supposed to be anymore, because this shit's just happening and I can't convince myself of who, what, where, why am I am.
Excuse me,
I didn't sign up for that.
I thought it was going
to
go this way.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I, you know, master, I want it to go this way.
Not lose everything.
Not up to you. Yeah, you lose everything. You lose everything because there never was anything. And it's a kind of a bumpy, you know, reentry. You're like, you're not sure if the heat tiles are going to fly off the thing. And you're going to end up as one fried turkey by the time you hit the Pacific Ocean. You're just like, it's so fucking hot in here. I'm going to fucking die unless this capsule hits the water really fucking soon. Gus Grissom was so excited by it, he popped the bolts just to get out of there. Yeah. All right. Gus, I mean, I know you lost the capsule, but I get that it was a little too claustrophobic and it was too hot. And you didn't want, you know, you had to get out of that capsule. Right? He should have just stayed in the capsule, right? And then they would have plucked the capsule in the helicopter, taken it to the, right, back to the ship. And then they would have popped the bolts or opened the door and Gus could have walked out. But he was like, I can't take it another second in this fucking capsule. And once I hit the Pacific Ocean, I'm just going in the water. Sorry, you lost it.
There was supposedly a medical reason for that and had to do with, like, nitrogen.
Well, sure. I mean, the blood gases change and the mind is, it goes into a, right, survival panic. And you're like, yeah, I think I'll just sit here at 110 degrees with all my hair burned off, waiting for them to lift me safely onto the deck of the USS Eisenhower, whatever it was. He says, no, I'm getting the fuck out of this capsule. Pop the bolts. Gus, I get it, man. I feel it. I'm feeling it.
Hey, we want that capsule.
Yeah, really. I'm sorry, we can't recover the capsule. It's filling up with water. We can't recover the capsule. Nah, we'll bring the fucking astronaut back to the boat. We'll deal with him later. That's what this is. Why do you think? It's like, oh, I'm going to come twice a week, maybe three times a week. This is kind of interesting. It's like, no, I'm backing off. It's getting too hot.
Well, I had that image when you were talking about it of somehow this. I just had this image of like walking in a swampy, you know, there's these little platforms and little steps, you know, where you're walking and they're solid at first.
Yeah.
And you think you're going in this direction. Well, all of a sudden they start to sink.
Yeah.
They're like little wooden things and they start to go. And you're like, it's the same thing as the reentry.
It's like those moving staircases, right? Yeah.
It's all disappearing. What's going to become of me?
Yep. That's right. One hot capsule. That's one hot capsule. But who avoids it? No one avoids this. No one avoids this dissolution. Not a single one of them.
I've been going strong for a while.
Yep.
Oh, you're a youngin'.
Yeah. That's just it. That's, you know, the Ram and his friends, you know, master, what is tapas?
well, it's kind of like Gus Grissom in a capsule, and it's really fucking hot, and even after you hit the water, you got to, like, bail out of that capsule. He didn't quite use that metaphor, but, you know.
I thought he used that voice.
Small Spanish plate.
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking that, too.
Yeah.
Tapas is small Spanish plates mm-hmm. in that language.
Okay.
In Sanskrit, tapasya is burning. That's what it is. The temperature goes up because, you know, the calamity. The temperature goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And aversion and, you know, impatience and all kinds of curious symptoms will arise as you start to break free of the deal that you don't remember making with yourself, that it was okay to lie to yourself for the long haul. Some part of yourself says, I'm breaking that deal, breaking that contract. I don't care what you do to me. You know, and the other part of yourself's like, hey, we had a contract. I'm breaking that contract. I'm not lying to myself anymore. Fuck, now what am I going to do? Okay. Doesn't matter what triggers it, right? Just don't look at me. I'm just a neighborhood idiot. This does it. This does it. This is what's doing it. This makes the deal. This gets us enrolled in, you know, compensatory consciousness. It enrolls itself in compensatory consciousness. Then at some point it says, I'm out of this contract. Mm-hmm. And now you have some real trouble. Mm-hmm. And it just takes you. It just fucking takes you in the ways that it takes you. From place to place and person to person and drug to drug and meeting to meeting. It's just, you know, this is your theater. This is it. It's the theater of one's life. And then you wake up. And the reflex to turn anything at all into anything at all just leaves. And you want to play it, you know, play it kind of chill. Play it a little bit close to the vest, you know. You don't want to frighten anybody. They'll notice it anyway, won't they? Yeah.
You've only lost your mind.
Yeah, that's right. You've lost your fucking mind. Yeah.
Mind is a terrible thing.
It's a terrible thing to have. Not a bad thing to lose.